Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to episode number 153 of Main 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Welcome all you to episode number 153 of Main 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, and Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is this? Let me give you a brief description of what the show's all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 25-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a huge 60 Music fan slash expert slash heard. Each week of this podcast, I take one song with one artist in the 60s, put the show in two parts. First part of the show, I'll talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good or why I think it sucks, and do my own personality on the range of the song, which will include the chords and my lyrics. And the second part of the show, deep into the history behind that track. In that part of the show, I'll talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song is recorded at, whether it be the studio, and I'll talk about the set musician to play of the song, whether it be the session musicians or the band members themselves, talk about the songwriters who wrote the song and producer that produced it, history behind label songs released at, least how the studio the song is recorded at, and the peak position of the song made up originally on Billboard Hot 100 charts when first came out in the year when the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on to this week's episode of the podcast, I just want to say that this is not going to be a two-part episode. I'm going to do everything in one for this particular episode, because next week I'm going to have a very special guest on my podcast, and I'm really, really excited to talk to this guy, because he's kind of an interesting guy, but he was a industry executive and label head and music publisher back in the 60s, so he was more or less in the business end of things quite most of the time. He did a lot of things back then, and some controversial things that you may not like, but it definitely would be a good person to talk to. His name's Artie Ripper. I'm super excited to talk to him. So that'll be the episode for next week. And so this one's going to be just one episode, no two parts. But let's get started in this week's show. Moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so I was looking through my episodes of the podcast that I've done, you know, recently, and I was trying to see what's an area of ground from the 60s that I haven't covered in a long time. What's something that we haven't done in quite a while? And I thought to myself, well, I haven't done instrumentals in a while, because the last one I did was the fall of 2020. Actually, it was actually I think it was the fall of 2019. So I haven't done an instrumental song in a couple of years. So I'm like, okay, let's do another one. Okay, so I mentioned instrumental, the whole genre of music, to you once a couple of times on this podcast, but just in case you don't remember exactly what I'm talking about, back in the 60s, there used to be this whole genre of music where there was basically you had these songs played by these really, really talented musicians, and they came from all over the place. Some of them came from New York, some of them came from LA, some of them came from Nashville, some of them came from, you know, England. I mean, they're all over the place. And the point I'm trying to make is that this sort of very specific genre of music from the 60s were these songs that had no words in them. Yeah, they were basically songs that just, you know, had musicians playing melodies and chords and rhythms, but there were no words. There was no singer in any of these songs. And it's interesting, because you don't really hear too much of this genre of music nowadays. You don't really hear any songs that are strictly instrumental songs where there's no words, there's no lyrics, there's no singers. And it's interesting to think about that, because when we think of instrumental music, a lot of times we think of songs that are used in film and television shows. And that's kind of what instrumental music has become nowadays. A lot of people think of instrumental music as music that's used in movies and TV shows, whether you see them on TV, on streaming, or in person at the theater. But back in the 60s, Instrumental songs used to be very, very big hits. They used to be huge. They used to be very strong top 40 radio, hits that were very, very big, specifically in the early 60s and even some in the mid 60s too. The mid 60s, I mean, all throughout the 60s, there were very, very big instrumental hits. Now, the thing I want you to keep in mind about instrumental hits that I think I talked about this once before on my podcast, but many of them, you know, as work, you could sort of like when you listen to a lot of these instrumental songs, you can almost picture like someone singing a lyric to these instrumental songs. You can all, you know, because these melodies that these instrumental songs had, a lot of times were built for someone to put lyrics to them and have someone sing lyrics and melody to go along with the instrumental. But originally, you know, these songs, you know, a lot of times, you know, did have lyrics and melody to go along with them. But the biggest hit song was the instrumental version of it. Or a lot of times these songs started out as instrumentals and then someone wrote lyrics to them and did vocal versions of them, which weren't hits. And the biggest hit songs were the instrumentals. So some songs started out with just no words, and some of them got, you know, and words are added on later by another songwriter, or, you know, they originally started out with words, but then, you know, the biggest hit was the instrumental cover version of it. So, you know, that's kind of what happened back in the 60s. And this is one of the songs that is exactly that. It's a really, really cool instrumental. And, you know, once I get done talking about the music of the song, I'm going to go straight into the history behind this record, because, you know, there's no lyrics in this song. So all we have to do is just talk about, the music, and then we'll go straight into the history behind it. But anyways, this is a really, really great instrumental. I love this one a lot. Okay, so the song came out in November 1962. It was by a band called the Rockin' Rebels. The name of the song is called Wild Weekend. Wow. Damn, this instrumental really kicks ass. It's really, really good. I mean, it's so grooving, and it's so like, it really just gets you going. It's a really, really good instrumental. And in this episode, we're going to talk about what makes the song so great, both musically and lyrically. But first, I'll take that back, because the song doesn't have any lyrics. It's just an instrumental. So we're going to just talk about the music, and then we're going to get into the history behind the song. So let's just really dive into the music first, and then we'll talk about the history behind it. Okay, so one thing that you might not be aware of when it comes to instrumentals from the 60s, because let's face it, I mean, we just don't hear this type of music anymore in the popular music landscape. I mean, nowadays with genres such as hip-hop and rap and, you know, electronic pop, I mean, you're not going to hear instrumental music unless it's like rave, EDM, that sort of genre music or house music. I mean, that's the only place where you're going to hear instrumental music. But this sort of thing is just sort of something that you just, it fell out of popularity probably in the 90s, I would imagine, because this instrumental music was still pretty big, you know, in the 70s and 80s, but probably in the 90s is when this genre music kind of just became dead. But one thing I want to tell you about instrumental music that you might not be aware of is that instrumental songs were so varied back then. And, you know, they didn't, and, it, you know, for genre music that didn't have any words, there were so many different, you know, types of instrumental music. I mean, you had surf rock, and then you had soul instrumentals, you know, which were more of an emphasis on organ and, you know, and raunchy sort of, you know, lead rhythm or rhythm guitar. And then you had surf rock, which was all about the, you know, I've talked about this before, the really reverb heavy, you know, Fender electric guitars, you know, and the bass too, and the electric bass. So I mean, there were so many types of instrumentals, and then you had trumpet instrumentals, and these were more orchestral instrumentals with horns and different percussion things happening. I mean, and good examples of those include Herb Alpert and Tijuana Brass and Al Hurt. I mean, there were so many different types of instrumental music. And then there's more orchestral instrumentals. You know, it was big string arrangements, like Theme for a Summer Place by Percy Faith. So there were so many types of instrumental music. You know, and this sort of song that I'm doing this week, it actually kind of echoes the genre of music from the late 50s. That sort of was about, you know, the instrumental sound. Okay, so this particular style, you know, of instrumental music was super raunchy and super just like, you know, really balls to the wall. Very, very much in the essence of rock and roll. I mean, this was not your soft, beautiful, easy listening instrumental. I mean, this definitely didn't have that sound at all. This was definitely the polar opposite of that. And you can tell right away, because when the song starts out, you hear that, you know, that picked electric guitar come in, and then you hear that really raunchy, just really just total, like, you know, really dirty sort of sounding saxophone come in playing the main melody of the song. And then also another cool thing about this song is just how really just freaking trash that guitar sounds. I mean, it almost sounds sort of distorted. I mean, I want to say this could be one of the earliest instrumental songs to feature really distorted guitar sound. Because, God, it just doesn't, it sounds clean, but it just doesn't really sound clean at all. And also, one thing you have to keep in mind about the song, and this is why it might sound pretty cool to your ears if this is your first time hearing it, is that I would bet that when they recorded the song, this was probably take two or take three, and it was a live take, meaning they played the whole record together all at once with no overdubs, and they just did the whole thing in two or three takes, and that was it. This was probably take three, you know, or take two. You know, because it has that, the energy of the song is so, like, lively and so, like, really, really just, the whole thing is just captured within the essence of this record. Because, I mean, literally, I mean, it feels so, there's some records from the 60s, when you listen to them, you can tell that they were pieced together, there were tons of overdubs, and everything was sort of, like, you know, put together, you know, piece by piece but then there are some records in the 60s when you listen to them, you can just hear that they were all done live and there was no overdubs and everything was all being recorded at the exact same time. Well, this is one of those records that totally has a live sound. Like if you're going to go see a band right now at a club, you know, because live music is back. I mean, it's that kind of sound. I mean, that's the sound of this record. And, you know, and it's interesting because you can't really hear the bass that well. And I think the reason for that being is because, you know, the bass, there's one guitar part that's covering the bass on this record. And that's what makes this record stand out. And also, you know, this is also kind of evident with this particular record from the 60s. But I don't know if you can tell, but back then, you know, it was very rare for bands to record to a click track. They pretty much never did it. So because of this, especially towards the end when you get towards that last section before the fade out, you can kind of hear the drummer dragging a little bit. He's not super in time with the rest of the band, but he's kind of just sort of dragging a little bit with the rest of the guys. But it still sounds kind of cool, and it still kind of sounds in time. It's just dragging a little bit, but that's because it didn't record to click tracks back in the 60s, and that's why you hear that sort of dragged sound with this record. But I mean, and look, the chord changes. Look, it's 1-4-5. That's basically what it is. But you know, again, the two standouts in this record are the saxophone, the tenor sax, and the guitar, which both, and they both sound really dirty and really raunchy and just not super clean and pleasant sounding at all. Again, this is not your easy listening instrumental with piano and strings and percussion. It's nothing like that at all. It's totally different. You know, it's a very, very much on the rock and roll end of being an instrumental song. And it sounds really cool. And it definitely, and look, I, you know, this is more of a 50s thing because a lot of 50s instrumentals sounded just like this. And I think the song actually was recorded in the 50s, but didn't become a hit until the 60s. And we'll talk about more of that in just a minute. But, you know, again, it's a great instrumental. And I just, and I love how it's, it clocks in at 2 minutes. You know, it's it gets you're in and out of there really, really quickly. I love that. It's so cool. And the drums sound really, really cool, too. I you know, they were recorded. You can definitely tell they were recorded very well. And you, even though this was probably done in mono, again, like literally live in just two or three takes. But it sounds great. I love the sound of this record. You know, and it's good because it just kind of gets you going. It starts out kind of small because you hear that electric guitar sort of overdubbing on the bass, and then you hear, you hear that one of the drummers playing one of the cymbals on his kit just to really get people going, and then it slams right into that main section of the song. It sounds really, really cool. Now, as far as the melody of the song is concerned, I think I mentioned this earlier on this podcast, but the melody is definitely singable. It's not like one of those unsingable melodies. It's very singable, and it makes you wonder if there was ever lyrics written to this song, because it, you know, I talked about that before. I've talked about this before on podcast. Many instrumental songs of the 60s initially had lyrics either written to them, or the instrumental hit came out and then lyrics are written after the song, after the instrumental song came out. So it happened either way. But this song, you think to yourself, were there lyrics written to the song? Well, that's what I'm going to talk about when I talk about the history behind the song. So sit back and hang tight, because I'm going to talk about it with you guys. I'm going to talk about that with you guys in just a few minutes. Okay, so essentially what happened with this particular song is that it started out with lyrics, actually. And this, by the way, this group I'm talking to, if you don't know anything about it, they originally called themselves the Rebels, but they changed their name to the Rockin' Rebels because of the Duane Eddy's backing band, the Rebels, because he went under the name Duane Eddy and the Rebels, so they actually had to change their name to the Rockin' Rebels. And they consisted of Jim and Mick Kipler. Jim Kipler played guitar, Mick Kipler played sax, and Tom Gorman played drums, and Paul Ballin played bass guitar, actually. So essentially this song did start out with lyrics, but before I get into that, let me just talk about something with you guys for a minute before I get into exactly the lyrics of the song, because this will kind of help you understand things a little bit better. Because you see, back in the 60s, radio, top 40 radio, was huge. Everyone listened to the radio back in the 60s. It wasn't like now where we all listen to music on streaming platforms or on YouTube. You know, it wasn't like now where we have all these different ways of listening to music and we don't have to listen to the radio anymore. Back in the 60s, your only options for listening to music were either buying 45 records or LPs, or listening to the radio, because there was no Spotify or Apple Music or Tidal or anything like that, and there was no YouTube either. So you basically, you didn't have a choice but either buy 45s and LPs or listen to the radio. So, you know, if you think about it, you can just imagine how huge radio was back in the 60s. It was just humongous, because the DJs that were the disc jockeys for these radio stations were basically just like celebrities, because they were so well known to so many different people. But the thing is that, you know, they're only well known to the region that they were, the station that they were a disc jockey for, and they're only well known to the regions in which they could reach, depending on how many watts their station had. So if a station only got, like, you know, 5,000 watts, then they probably only well known to the city that they were basically, DJ in, the radio station they were a DJ in, you know, back in the 60s. I mean, But if they got 50,000 watts, they would probably well known to quite a few different parts of the country. Because, you know, if a station got 50,000 watts, that meant that you could, you know, a lot of different parts of the country could listen to that one station. Not everywhere, but at least more than just one or two regions. So, you know, if you think about it, DJs were so big because these people were the people that brought to the people growing up in the 60s their music. They were the ones who, they were like the cool adults that basically essentially loved rock and roll music of that time, and, you know, essentially took a chance on many records that either weren't, you know, were not, you know, on the charts yet nationally, and they played these songs on the radio and they became hits. You know, and they had such a say over what songs they could play on the radio. I mean, the, you know, the DJs had a lot of power back then as far as making or breaking hit records, because everybody listened to the radio back in the 60s. I mean, it was the thing to do. I mean, in fact, people used to have these little big these little transistor radio boxes that they used to carry around all the time. And then they would turn the dial and see what stations they would want to listen to. You know, and most of the time it was stations that could be reachable within the area that they were in. So, you know, I mean, there were several big DJs back in the 60s, and it was definitely a very, radio was such a very powerful and real thing. It was such a powerful medium back in the 60s. And, you know, stations, you know, could either make or break a record, basically. That's how powerful radio was at that time. I mean, you know, it was so huge. And the reason why I'm saying this is because this song, Wild Weekend, was actually the theme song to a disc jockey in a station in Buffalo, New York called WKBW. And his name is Tom Shannon. And he used to have his own show on WKBW before he moved over to CKLW later on in the 60s. He was first on WKBW, and he basically had his own radio show. He was one of the main disc jockeys on WKBW in Buffalo, New York, and he had his own theme song. And that's the other thing about people don't really understand about, you know, radio back then, is a lot of DJs had their own theme music that they would play whenever they, you know, whenever it was time to, you know, for them to work, whenever it was their time slot was up. And it was time for them to, you know, start playing records and start, you know, announcing certain things. You know, they had their own theme song. And this song, Wild Weekend, was essentially the theme song to his show. And he co-wrote it with a guy named Phil Todaro. And the lyrics, you know, again, you can kind of hear the lyrics of the song. It's KB Radio, KB Radio, top tunes and weather. So glad we can get together on the Tom Shannon Show. So you can kind of get exactly, you know, the idea. I mean, you can almost fill in the blanks at this point. Just by knowing those lyrics and knowing the melody of the song, you can basically fill in the blanks. So, you know, before the song was a big instrumental hit by this group, the Rockin' Rebels, it was essentially just a theme song for Tom Shannon back in the late 50s, early 60s. It was his theme. And but how it became an instrumental hit is kind of interesting, because you know, again, this group was from Buffalo, New York, the same city that, you know, that WKBW was being broadcasted out of. And essentially, you know, they asked Tom Shannon to play at a record hop, and they asked if they could play an instrumental only version of his theme song. And basically, and they did, and, you know, and they honestly thought that, okay, this actually sounds kind of cool. I kind of like the way my theme song sounds instrumental wise. So basically what they did is that they took the group to a recording studio in nearby Philadelphia called Rico Parker Rico Art Studios. Actually, it was not Cam Parker Studio, but Rico Art Studios. They took the group to Philadelphia at Rico Arts to record you know, the song, which was this instrumental version of his theme, and they called it The Wild Weekend, and this is in 1960. So when it first came out, it flopped because it was on a couple of small different labels and it just couldn't take off, unfortunately. And it was first on Marley Records and then Casino Records, but both times when it was released on both those labels, it tanked. And then a couple of years later, in 1962, it got picked up by Swan Records, a huge major label out of more like independent, but a very big independent label out of Philadelphia in the 60s. And they picked the record up, and it basically, by the spring of 1962, like February, March, it became a huge hit, like late winter, early spring of 1963, it became a very big hit. It actually made the top 10 and sold over 1 million copies, and it peaked number 8 in the Billboard charts, and it was big. I mean, they got to play on American Bandstand, so, I mean, they had a huge hit. But again, they changed their name to the Rockin' Rebels because of the group Duane Eddy and the Rebels. So that's why they changed their name. This was a theme song for a DJ, named Tom Shannon, who was a DJ for WKBW back in the 60s. And then he moved to a couple different stations like WHCT and also CKLW. But, you know, this was his theme song. So... This is basically the theme that he used, you know. And look, I mean, if you're wondering, where does this exist now? Because nobody listens to the radio now. Everybody listens to music on Spotify, Apple Music, or Pandora, or whatever. And or they listen to it on, you know, Tidal or Amazon. I mean, you know, where does this exist these days? Well, what I can tell you is that there is a platform called Sirius XM Radio, and that is probably the last remaining, aspect of, you know, where this exists now is Sirius XM Radio. I mean, there are some things in the internet radio, but really where this is thriving, this whole sort of, you know, DJs playing the songs and, you know, you not selecting which songs you want to hear, but the DJs playing it, where that exists now is mainly on Sirius XM Radio. So that's where it's thriving. So you'll hear different DJ themes on there, just like back in the 60s. So, but that's just a little sort of tidbit about the way things were versus where they are now, because, you know, this doesn't really exist anymore, you know, because nobody listens to the radio now, but that's just where things were back in the 60s, you know, because everybody listens to the radio because there was no Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, any of that didn't exist. So, you either had to buy 45s and LPs from the record stores or listen to AM radio. And the AM radio station that you listened to depended on where you lived because, you know, not every AM... There was no single AM radio station that could reach everywhere. Basically, all the AM radio stations, you know, were singular to a very specific regions of the country. So, you know, it really, really depended on where you lived. So that's something to, you know, consider what station you listened to back in the 60s, you know, because there was no station that could reach every single region across the country. So that's something to consider. And that concludes this week's podcast. So that concludes episode number 153 of my 60 music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and I actually wanted to end this episode by just letting you guys know something. This has happened before on my podcast, but every time this happens, I feel like I owe an exclamation for you guys, because unfortunately, you know, since random people listen to this podcast, it's hard for me to sort of reach out to you guys individually and let you know, if there is an absence that needs to be done for this podcast that's unexplainable. A lot of you people out here listen to my podcast. I don't know you, so I don't necessarily have your contact information, you know, or anything like that. I don't have a mailing list where you guys follow it. So it's hard for me to, get in touch with you guys because I just don't know you. So with that being said, I just wanted to say that, I wanted to apologize for a very long unexplained absence of me doing this podcast, but I'll explain to you exactly what happened and why I was gone for so long. The first reason is because I ran into computer problems again for the first time in 3 years. Because essentially what happened was that all of a sudden I was getting ready to record the next podcast, but my hard drive and my battery both failed on me. And it was done doing something normal routine that I've done for my podcast for a long time. But while I was doing that, you know, it just, my hard drive and my battery both failed on me. So essentially, my computer was absent for a very, I was without it for a very long time, a whole week. So I couldn't really do anything for this podcast for a while. So plus I was trying to decide what song I was going to do next, and I was trying to get things sorted out with my two interview episodes I had coming up. So again, my apologies if it's been a while since I've put out an episode. I'm actually gonna continue to put out new episodes of this podcast, even if I get busy working, because I love doing this show. I love, you know, sharing my knowledge and expertise with you guys about this music, and especially if you're young and you don't really know too much about this era of music, or you don't really know too much about music, this part of music history in general. So again, I apologize for not putting out an episode for a while. I just had really bad computer issues. The first time in 3 years, actually. I haven't been without a computer in 3 years. You know, I haven't been able to take it to a shop since then. So, you know, it's been a very long time since I've had computer problems. So yeah. So you know, again, also the next couple interview episodes, you know, the guy who you know, the business guy I was going to talk to on my podcast, he's still, you know, really, really busy closing deals and doing all kinds of stuff. And he's got computer issues, too. So I'll talk to him soon enough. And the two members of the Frugum Company, I'm still scheduling those ones out, too. So I'm going to keep putting out episodes in the meantime. And again, I'm sorry for not putting out an episode for a while. And it's kind of weird because I wish I could talk to you guys and let you guys know when I have an unexplained absence for me doing this podcast, but I just can't. I have no way of doing that. So that's why I wanted to let you get on here and let you guys know that. So, but anyways, as per usual, if you liked my analysis in this week's song, you thought it was cool, and you learned some really cool information about this week's song, you didn't know anything about it, and you learned a lot about the history behind the song, you didn't know anything about it, and you learned some really cool historical facts and music on the music industry back in the 60s. If you did, please email me at samltwilliamicloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies and check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. Also, you can check out the official EP you put out this year. We'd love you guys to listen to it. Let me know what you think of it. That's in the link in the description of this episode's podcast. And you can also check out the official Spotify and YouTube playlist for this podcast. You'll be able to find all the songs talked about on the show so far, including some of the ones I mentioned in interview episodes. And also, you can check out the official Red Bull merch store for this podcast. You'll be able to find the super cool merch, which has my own official logo for this podcast on there. You know, I say these things at the end of every episode. I hope you guys know what I have for you guys for this podcast. And you can check out the official music video I put out. And also, you can check out, you know, the two interview articles I did this year for Honk Magazine and Shout LA. So all those things are on there, you know, the link in the description of this episode of this podcast. So please go check them out. And let me think of all them. And yeah, so again, my apologies for not putting out an episode for a while. I'm going to put out episodes, you know, keep putting them out for now. Just want to let you guys know that. So I'm Sam Williams. And thank you guys for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things groovy.